Well, thank you very much, Dennis, and welcome to all of you. Wow, this is some crowd, and what a sound that singing is. I wish we could take it to all of our congregations. It's quite inspiring to hear that. I guess I should say officially good afternoon, everyone. Buenos dias, and bonjour à tous. Did I leave anyone out? Guten Morgen. But Miami was always a very cosmopolitan congregation, people from many cultures and many lands, and it always reminded me of New York, where I first started attending God's Church back around 1960, very, very diverse congregation. Well, it's a real joy to be with you today to celebrate this special occasion, 50th anniversary, your jubilee, I guess we could call it, celebration. As I was thinking about this, August 1964, I wonder how many of you can think of some other historic event in God's work that began in August 1964. Some of you should be, because you were there, perhaps shortly after that. Vassar College in Big Sandy, Texas began in August, the end of August 1964. My wife and I had the privilege of being two of the pioneer students there. I thank Mr. Hafley and Mr. Franks and a lot of others in the various congregations. I know Mr. Thompson was there. When I mentioned that Mr. Thompson and I used to be basically teenagers in the church in Big Sandy, people look at us like, what? And then when I mentioned, well, I used to date his wife and he used to date mine, then they really raised their eyebrow. Wait a minute, what was that all about? Well, we were all single back then, you have to understand. But it's sort of a double celebration, I guess, in one sense. How time flies. 50 years, hard to believe that much time has gone by. That would make me about 58 years old. Well, I do appreciate the opportunity to speak to you today, and as I had done a number of times in Miami when I was a pastor here, I thought I'd begin with a quiz. Oh, did I wear out my welcome already? Now, I checked with Mr. Rand about sermonettes. I haven't given one in a long time, and he said they're 45 minutes now. Is that right? It used to be 10 or 12 minutes, but all right, some of you might remember this question because I did address it about 10, 12 years ago in Miami. If you get this question right, then you can consider yourself a fairly knowledgeable Bible student. Write down everything you know about the following Bible character. 2 points, three, four, however many you can think of, as quickly as you can. The Bible character is Mnason. M-N-A-S-O-N. Mnason. I think one person's writing. All right, well, maybe you're just making mental notes in your head with all of the points. Let me give you a clue. Perhaps you need a hint. Mnason of Cyprus, as opposed to Mnason of Miami. Well, don't feel badly if you don't know who he is. Very few people would, even Bible experts, I'm sure, because he's only mentioned one time in the Bible, and that is in Acts 21, verse 16. So turn over to Acts 21, verse 16, and let's read about this character. Acts 21:16, there went with us also certain disciples of Caesarea, and brought with them one Mnason of Cyprus. And this is in the King James Version, an old disciple with whom we should lodge. Now, it's very easy to read this verse and not attach very much significance to it, but I have over the years been struck by these very fleeting, brief cameo appearances of individuals in the scriptures that perhaps are only mentioned one time, and that's it. Why did God choose to mention this about this individual and only tell us one sentence about him? Nothing else is said, yet this verse has a lot to tell us. The Revised Standard Version reads this way, "And some of the disciples of Caesarea went with us, bringing us the house of Mnason, an early disciple with whom we should lodge." The Living Bible has one of the early believers, and so does the New King James Version. The Moffat translation has, "He was a disciple of old standing." Now, the term "old disciple" in the Greek, archaios mazitas, means an original disciple. The commentaries speculate that he was a disciple from Christ's ministry, or most certainly at least one of the 120. Either way, he was a disciple and a believer for a long time in the faith. Acts 21, verse 16 takes place. Scholars can argue about the exact date, but it's in the late 50s A.D. So Mnason had been a disciple for about 25 years. And God is calling our attention to the fact that Mnason was a long-time disciple. Here is a man who had been serving faithfully for many years, still at his heart in God's work, hospitable, still dedicated to the calling that he had received many years earlier. God was pleased with this man, and he recorded this fleeting mention so that all of us would remember it and know that God considers this a meaningful event. Now, we have many Mnasons with us today, and many others who are unable to be here for various reasons. People who have been faithful from the time that God called them, whether it is 25, 40, 50, or in some cases more than 60 years ago. Let me just list a few that have had their roots here in the Miami congregation. Vicki Sawyer. There she is. Melba Wills. Carol Vokers. Joe Molina. Cornelius Collins, who's not able to be with us today because of health. Dennis and Diane Garland. Phil and Patty Garland. Maurice and Alina Smith. Johnny and Lillian Hendricks. Clarendon Johnson. Cecilia Cardenas. Nancy Say and Faye Mongbay, just to name a few. Then there are those who are already in the place of safety, awaiting the promise of life that is to come. Eloy Valdez, Winston Howard, Karen Collins, Elnora Collins, Annie Hughes, Frank Clare, Vince Seacoats, Doris Carney. Dear Doris, if you ever met her, you never forget her. Courtright Peters, Veronica Galliott-Satos. We used to visit her, especially when she was placed into a nursing home. And when she got excited about something, she started to speak to you in Greek. And I would do my best to tell her I do not speak Greek. And so a little light would go off and she started speaking in Romanian. But like most Americans, I had to explain, look, I am monolingual, American, sort of synonymous. And then there is the individual whom I think all of us would consider the patriarch of the Miami congregation, Howard Wills. And just yesterday, the congregation lost another member, our beloved Doreen Kahn, where I think Mr. Hafley sent out an announcement about that. Let's turn over to 1 Thessalonians chapter 3, 1 Thessalonians, and let's begin in verse 3. 1 Thessalonians chapter 3, rather, verse 6. But now that Timothy has come to us from you and brought us good news of your faith and love, and that you always have good remembrance of us, greatly desiring to see us, as we also to see you. Therefore, brethren, in all of our affliction and distress, we were comforted concerning you by your faith. For now we live if you stand fast in the Lord. For what thanks can we render to God for you, for all the joy with which we rejoice for your sake before our God? The reason it was such a joy to Paul was that after all these years, the members were still growing. They still had their hearts in God's work. They still were committed to the truth that they had received so many years before. And Paul rejoiced to see this type of commitment to God. It's inspiring at the Feast of Tabernacles every year to run into someone you haven't seen for many years, especially people that perhaps used to be children and teenagers. They come up and they say, "We're still here, Mr. D, still here." And it's been 20, 25, 30 years and more. There is another example in the Bible. I hadn't thought of this until I recently gave several sermons on the book of Daniel. There's another example in the Bible of faithfulness for many years, and it would be the prophet Daniel. When you follow the story, he was probably a young teenager when he was taken captive into Babylon. And when he was threatened, you remember when the edict was passed by those 120 satraps, or as I called them in the sermon, sad rats, that said, if you petition any god other than Darius the Mede for 30 days, you're going to be thrown into a lion's den. And so, what did Daniel do? Well, we know what he did. We'll see that in a moment. Daniel chapter 6 and verse 10. Daniel chapter 6, and let's just read verse 10. Now, when Daniel knew that the writing was signed, that if you bow down and pray to any other god other than Darius the Mede, they were going to be thrown into a lion's den. He knew it had been signed. And in his upper room, with his windows open toward Jerusalem, he knelt down on his knees three times that day and prayed and gave thanks before his God, as was his custom since early days. That's what he'd been doing for many years. How many years? Well, he is about 75 years old in chapter 6. This is right before the fall of Babylon, 539, 540 BC. This is some 60 years later from the time he was taken captive. So he had been faithful, praying to God probably three times a day for more than 60 years. He bowed down just as he had always done. Why? Some people have wondered, well, why didn't he just forego praying for 30 days? They were laying in wait for him to find him doing this. And then after 30 days were over, he could just pray six times a day for the next 30 days. See? That would be a way to work that out, a political solution, you might call it. Well, I think one of the reasons, not the only one, but one of the reasons, is that this incident with the lion's den, being 60 years from the time he was taken captive, he was now in his mid-70s, and he'd been praying like this for those many years. It was now so much a part of his life that nothing was going to deter him from speaking to his Creator every single day of his life. He could no more willingly skip a day of praying than he could forget how to breathe. And when you reach 60 or 65 or 70 or 80 or 90, like Mr. Rand, And you've been praying for 50 and 60 and 70 years. Things come into focus and are much clearer. By the time you get to that age, especially if you've been close to God, you begin to realize what really matters. What's important? What has value? What has meaning? Your focus is sharp. His life was in God's hands, and he was never going to willingly remove himself from that relationship, no matter what the cost was going to be. Let's go over to 1 Corinthians 15 and look at verse 51. 1 Corinthians 15 and verse 51. Behold, I tell you a mystery. We shall not all sleep, but we shall all be changed. One of the most comforting words in the Bible, or scriptures in the Bible. All, the same all that dies is going to live again. In a moment, in the twinkling of an eye, at the last trumpet, the trumpet will sound, the dead will be raised incorruptible, and we shall be changed. And then down in verse 58, because of that, therefore, my beloved brethren, be steadfast, immovable, always abounding in the work of the Lord, knowing that your labor is not in vain in the Lord. God sees and he knows every single person. Manasseh's example is an attestation to the fact that our labor is not in vain. God sees us, he knows our hearts, and is well pleased if we are continuing to serve him and grow. We may not have a lot of fame or praise now, but Manasseh's example serves to show us that God is watching us. The real strength and power of the church of God is found in the lives of people like Manasseh and thousands of others just like you who have committed their lives to God and his work. Individuals who found that treasure hid in the field a long time ago, that pearl of great price that perhaps you discovered back in, as my mother-in-law did, 1947, that pearl of great price. Let's finish now with Romans chapter 2 and verse 7. Romans 2 and verse, well, let's begin in verse 6. God is going to render to each one according to his deeds, it says in verse 6, eternal life to those who by patient, continuance in doing good seek for glory, honor, and immortality. Keep that in mind. Your quiet dedication is known to God. Stay faithful unto the end, and you can join Manasseh and thousands just like him in doing God's great work, not just for 25 or 40 or 50 years, but forever.